your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And welcome to Monday afternoon, everyone. Thanks for tuning into the Wintrust Business Lunch on this beautiful summer day. Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis are in the studio from Chicago Inn. We'll kick a few stories around with them coming up. But later in the program, we will talk to Elizabeth Buchwald, who writes for MarketWatch. And she had a piece on MarketWatch that looks at the, it's kind of a difficult thing to put into words, I guess, but the economic prosperity of countries. And the more secular a country is, the wealthier it tends to be. So the more religious, perhaps, the poorer it tends to be. The U.S. is a big outlier in that, but we will talk to Margaret, about Elizabeth, I should say, about that and about what causes that. Is it the religion that causes the trouble? Is it the prosperity that causes the secularism? That's coming up in the second half of the Business Lunch, but we need the whole first half for Jim and Catherine. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for coming by.
Hi, Steve. Hey, Steve.
I'm sorry, I don't have you on there. Try again, Jim.
Hey, Steve, how's it going?
Okay, good. I will learn this eventually, but just not yet. Okay, so let's jump right in because you guys have a story just up. Catherine, you wrote it about clearly Kim Kardashian ripping off a company here in Chicago.
Yeah, so Chicago-based tech company Vibes Media, they filed a lawsuit against Kim Kardashian West's company, KKW Fragrance. They're alleging that her perfume bottle copies the company's logo. So, you know, Vibes, their logo is like a chat bubble that says Vibes in lowercase letters. And then the perfume bottle is another chat bubble that says Vibes, but in all caps.
It's a completely different font. It doesn't look at all alike. The only thing they share is that thought bubble, right?
Right. And of course, the word Vibes.
Jim?
Your Honor, what
are you going to do with this
I love this lawsuit for one reason. Vibes says kind of in the litigation that there is a, quote, strong likelihood that consumers will be confused into believing that the brands are similar. First of all, no, there isn't, right? There's no way that this is Chicago media agency is going to be confused with a Kim Kardashian West perfume. However, the logos are really similar. They're the same little black chat box image with a white logo that says Vibes, right? So it is kind of bizarre that the images are as close as they are, but I'm not sure that they really have much to stand on in terms of confusing the two.
So are they suing to win, or are they suing to get publicity for their company?
Boy, it feels like the latter, right? Yeah. It feels like this is an opportunity to kind of connect with the Kardashians and kind of get a little 10 minutes of publicity here.
Oh, way to go, Catherine. You wrote the story and you gave them the publicity.
Yeah.
Tell me about Winston. Jim, you write about this. This is exciting to me. It's a subscription service, but it's a piece of hardware that it says will completely protect your home data, online data.
Yeah, so Winston is a Chicago startup all about online privacy, and they're kind of taking an interesting approach to this with a hardware device. So it plugs into your home's router and your cable modem.
Everything else has always been software, right?
So there are approaches that you can take to kind of beef up your home's online security, online privacy, and a lot of it is software-based. So you got to download a lot of kind of confusing software, and you really have to sort of know what you're doing. What Winston is doing is really taking a very easy approach to protecting your privacy. Actually, their quote is smart enough for the NSA, easy enough for mom.
Right. And so it's just a plug and play. You just plug it in and you're set.
Exactly.
And do you know, Catherine, what it blocks? I mean, I would imagine it blocks ads from following you, but go ahead.
So it keeps out hackers, protects you from corporate and government surveillance, which is something, you know, everyone's concerned about.
It's got Rand Paul's stamp of approval.
And it can increase your internet speed by blocking ads that, you know, follow you and give you those targeted.
Okay, but you, Jim, you also wrote that it will block, so people don't know where you are, blocks your location.
Yeah, your physical, your IP address and your location are become cloaked because it encrypts your internet
but
connection.
But that's useful when it comes time for getting directions in Google Maps or things like that.
Yeah, you know, nobody wants to feel like they're being kind of tracked on the internet, but there are some things that are you benefit by having the internet kind of knowing where you are, right? One thing would be Google Maps. The other thing is that, you know, sometimes a targeted Facebook ad is actually helpful because it shows you something that you do want to buy based on your previous internet search history. So you will kind of lose out on some of those conveniences with the service
but
like this.
But if I buy this and subscribe to it, right, it's a $15 monthly subscription?
That's right. So they're in production right now, plan to go live with a product available for sale later in the year.
I won't have to worry about people hacking into my email or my online or my files on my computer.
That's right. So their claim is that you is a simple plug and play opportunity here to completely protect your online privacy.
This guy's going to sell a gazillion of these.
Well, you really think so, right? And I think it's interesting too because, like exactly what we said, there are a lot of kind of software approaches to this, but not nearly as many hardware approaches. And what we're seeing is a couple of smart local seed investors in Chicago already backing $1 million round for these guys. So there's some definitely VC interest so far.
Okay, so it'll be $15 subscription once it comes out, and that will be sometime next year.
That's sometime later this year.
Sometime later this year. Yeah. Okay, good. Well, we don't have to have him on. I'm fascinated by this. We've got about 30 seconds before the break, but Catherine, you write about Get Loud, which is, I always like when the tech companies do something that people have been doing for hundreds of years.
Yeah, so Get Loud now, they're a new Chicago-based startup, and they are making it easier to send snail mail or postcards to any elected official. So that's all the way from President Trump down to your local alderman here in Chicago.
So if you want to change a law or something, you want to, I think they said people write mostly to President Trump and Vice President Pence, mm-hmm. which makes sense because they're the only national, but what you do is you go online, you fill out a postcard, you pay them $2, and they mail it for you?
Yep. So you can pick a postcard that's designed by, you know, they're working with local artist organizations. A portion of those proceeds will go to the artists themselves. And yeah, you can write a message. You can write anything you want, but your real name and address will be used.
Which is nice.
There's some accountability
there.
What
sets them apart? I guess it would be that the postcards are nicer than the one I would buy at the post office.
And it just makes it easier, too, right? Yeah. Like, it takes all the hassle away from trying to mail a physical postcard, right? As silly as that sort of sounds.
And it does sound very silly. We've got Tech Revolution. They'll send postcards for you.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And it is 1222. We've got the headlines from Domaty coming up, but right now Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis are in the studio. Catherine, you have a story on Chicago Inno about the University of Illinois Accelerator.
Yeah.
And the finalists there.
Yep. So U of I hosts its iVenture Accelerator every summer, where it invites student startups to come and get the guidance and, you know, coaching they need to build a product and form a business plan.
And they're in the toward the end of it now. Are they doing the presentations? Was that last week
or
this week?
Yep. Demo days were last week.
Okay.
Yep. And so there were 13 startups in it this year. And there's some really interesting ones. You know, one we've been kind of talking about was Menu 3, which makes an augmented reality restaurant menu.
Okay. So these companies then, they're finalists. They did their presentations and they're hoping to raise capital.
Yes. Right?
That's what's coming out of this. Okay. Menu 3. Augmented reality to help you choose what kind of burger you want?
So basically imagine, you know, being able to point your phone at your menu and see an image, a 3D sort of rendering.
Like the hog being slaughtered?
Or... yeah, to see the cheesecake spin around in 3D, right, and kind of get a look at like what exactly it is that you're ordering. So, you know, a lot of restaurants don't want to throw pictures on their menu. Not every place is Denny's and IHOP, right? So,
right.
But this allows you to kind of keep the menu looking a little classy while offering eaters a chance to kind of see what you're eating.
Because how often are you at a restaurant and you see a dish go by and you say, hey, that's a nice looking dish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this would help with that. Okay. A thumbs up, Catherine?
Thumbs up, yes.
Okay,
could have used this weekend.
Really? What did you order? What was your mistake?
Well, you know, at a restaurant I hadn't been to before, it was upscale Italian, and so there were some words on there I wasn't familiar with, and I was like, okay.
Is upscale
Googling everything, trying to figure out what is that.
All right, so Catherine's all in for that one. Gray Matters, have we talked about that before?
So they do they're the concussion startup, right? So they're working on something that you can put kind of within your helmet, like a sensor technology to kind of help teams kind of identify when a concussion could possibly be taking place.
I always get a kick out of these, and I've said this before because I just like talking about the companies and the different ideas. So that's a big idea. And then there's another company, Display One, which here we are in this tech.
Yeah.
Competition, and it sounds like it's acrylic boxes for your prizes.
Yeah, basically your collectible items. They basically,
not to put it down because these are students out there, right?
So,
coming up with ideas. And
they sell their product, Shoebox One, a clear acrylic glass case designed for sneakers or kind of other items. It has a beveled door, LED lights, mirrored backing. So if you've got, you know, maybe you bought
a pair of
Shaquille O'Neal's tennis shoes off eBay and you want to put them in your living room, you can throw it in one of these guys.
Okay, and it does sound like I'm being mean, but I don't mean to be, but I'm not sure about that one. Or Ring Wing, it says, it's described as makes an indoor catchable glider for children that helps teach them how to catch.
Well, I mean, fine motor skills, right, is like something that kids are trying to improve from an early age, right? So maybe you're thinking about it in terms of, hey, my child isn't doing so great with fine motor. This is a great way to kind of teach them some of those skills early on.
And we live in Chicago, and it's cold most of the time. You can't go out in the backyard and throw a ball. So we need an indoor toy.
Yeah, but you could throw a ball in the living room. I mean, you could throw a ball, right?
There's a product for everybody, Steve.
Yes, and Nuovo makes smart pacifiers that can detect acid reflux in babies.
So, right, that's what's so great about student venture competitions, because you get, devices that teach kids how to catch, and then smart pacifiers.
Right,
so you get,
right.
It really runs the gamut of, like, types of products. And so really you're seeing everything from kind of the gimmicky, quote-unquote, to the really high-tech.
And I emphasize, right, these are students coming up with this. So they're miles ahead of where I was when I was in college. I don't mean to put any of them down. And when I read that acid reflux thing, I'm thinking, really, what's this about? But I suppose they're not making a product for every baby. They're making a product for babies who have some sort of distress or things like that.
Parents who believe that this is, passed down, or there's something predisposed to it. So it's not for every parent, but a parent who is certainly worried about this particular issue.
Another company on the list is SnapClips. We've talked about them. They've been on Shark Tank.
Yeah, already a little advantage for those guys, right? They've already gotten some press being on Shark Tank and getting an investment on Shark Tank. And yeah, they make the kind of clips that secure to your barbell to keep the free weights from moving around.
And last one is Red Clover Reader, which I like.
So they're an edtech startup, and they connect parents to self-published and independent authors of children's books who are, creating particularly culturally diverse
right.
books.
Right, so sort of an idea if you're interested in reading to your kids about things like that, they'll connect you that way.
Exactly.
Catherine Davis and Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno. Read more at chicagoinno.com. And, of course, there's the Inno Minute every morning on the opening bell with Steve Grzanich.
At 5:25.
Wake up to it. Thanks for coming by.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And it is 12:37 now on this Monday afternoon. Thanks very much for tuning in. Randy Schaefer will be here a little bit later. She's a digital editor for the Chicago Tribune and comes by on most Mondays to talk about the latest in social media. And I learned a lot from a story she sent me about Venmo. I've never used Venmo. I think my wife has. My kids certainly have. I didn't realize how public it was. And now there's this sort of Twitter bot that is shaming people who buy things on Venmo. So we'll talk to Randy about that a little bit later. Right now, it's time to say hello to Elizabeth Buchwald, who is a writer about personal finance at MarketWatch, and she joins us on the phone line now. Elizabeth, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. Okay, so you're going to have to talk slowly to me about this, because I think it might be a little over my head. Is that okay? Are you willing to do that?
Sure. Let me know if I go too fast at any point.
That was just about the right speed there. So I did not know that there was this relationship between the religiousness of a country and its economic wealth. But it seems as if it's fairly a given that the more religious a country is, the less religious a country is, the more economically prosperous it's going to be.
Well, so it's not exactly the case that it's that way. And it was studied a bit in the 19th century. So two sociologists studied that, and one found that it was the secularization that led to economic prosperity. It's the Protestant Work Ethic and Spirit of Capitalism, a very famous book. And another sociologist found that it was the opposite. But what this new study finds is that, yes, there is this connection that secularization leads to economic prosperity, but there's a caveat to that that kind of has to be followed by more acceptance for individual rights. And it's not, a one-for-one, secularization will lead to economic prosperity. There are a bit of catches there, too, but it's interesting to note that connection.
Well, and another caveat would be the country we're sitting in right now, right? Because I don't know if most of us consider such, but the United States, by world standards, is a pretty religious country, and it certainly is among, if not the most wealthy country.
Yeah, so that was interesting, too. And when I spoke to the researchers, we were kind of talking through how they got to, you know, this result in general of the study, how they found this connection. And I asked them, you know, are there any exceptions to this rule? And the first one that they pointed out was the United States, of course, and with the U.S. So it's interesting because they're not the only one, too, that kind of has this little outlier issue. It's also countries like Ireland, Italy, and Poland, who are also considered to be more religious, that are, you know, doing a little bit better than you would expect based on the data of religious countries. So it's not just the U.S., but it shows that there isn't that one-for-one relation that we'd probably like to make, because it's easy to say, like, oh, if a country's secular, they're right. going to be doing better.
So where would you put Russia in that? Because they were sort of had enforced secularism, but they certainly don't respect individual rights.
Yeah, so a lot of countries in Eastern Europe, and I'm not sure if Russia fits into this particular, but they're more secular, and you would think that their, you know, economy would be doing better than it actually is, and they're doing a little bit subpar, so they're kind of the reverse of the U.S.
With Poland maybe as an exception.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, Poland, yeah.
So I was going to say, so then the question is, is it the secularism or the lower religious influence that leads to the prosperity, or does the prosperity lead to secularism? I mean, I could make an argument for the latter, in that, you know, a lot of people who are down and out, you know, religion is very important to them because it shows them a path forward, that they, you know, can overcome their life situation. So maybe once they do overcome that, they might find that they would have less need for a personal religion. The researchers seem to have found the opposite, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Explain that for me.
Yeah, so as I said before...
This is where you go slowly, Elizabeth, so feel free.
Sure. So yeah, as I said before, it's not this causation here that we'd like to have, that, you know, I think we always like to, we gravitate towards, you could say, you know, this predicts this. And it's not quite the case that if a country becomes more secular, that they're going to have economic prosperity. That's not the case, although there were a lot of countries that did experience that. And they looked, over an 100-year period of GDP. And what they did was they looked at this World Values Survey, which kind of assesses things like, do you believe in God? And, you know, how important is, you know, this type of religion in your life? All those types of questions. And they compared it to GDP growth. So you see that for some countries this is the case, but for others this wasn't quite the case. And the researchers, they told me that, you know, a lot of this has to do with acceptance of individual rights. So countries that support gay marriage, or countries that... you know, equal rights for females, they are the ones that are more likely to have economic prosperity. But again, it's not saying that all countries who are secular and support individual rights are going to have this economic boom.
But it did say that the countries that tended to prosper economically were moving towards secularism before that happened, correct?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. So where does that take us? I don't think there's probably a model or a recommendation out of this, but what's your final takeaway from this story that you wrote?
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting you say that, too. I guess my final takeaway is, you know, take everything with a grain of salt. Just because you read about these things doesn't mean it's necessarily true. There's a lot of fine print. But also, you know, pay attention to what's going on in society. It's religion is very important in a lot of people's lives. And, you know, people's lives are what makes up the economy. So, you know, pay attention to that, but take everything with a grain of salt.
Okay, Elizabeth, I've been writing stories a lot longer than you. So my personal advice to you is never tell people to take what you've written with a grain of salt.
Well, it's not what I wrote. It's the research.
Oh, that's right. The hell with them. Thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, I appreciate it too.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. So 20 years ago, many people probably wouldn't have thought that data and information technology would rule the world. But here we are, and look at us now. We also may not have thought about our ability to keep up with the emerging industry's demand. Did you know that the Chicago area is the third largest location for data center capacity in the country? These are those big technology-filled rooms with floor-to-ceiling servers and buzzing as they crank away at processing information in nanoseconds. Those places. It's what so many industries are integrating into their business these days, and these centers are creating tons of jobs. So let's keep supporting our emerging industries. And speaking of emerging, if you're an investor, what would you do with $1 billion? Okay, calm down, Dr. Evil. Valor Equity Partners, though, is a responsible company, and they'll likely invest their $1 billion in a well-thought-out and diverse manner. They just secured a specific fund of $1 billion to focus on making investments between $25 and $75 million each, and has stakes in companies like SpaceX, Fuda, Tesla, SolarCity, and others. So let's see those returns make it back to the good old Midwest. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It is 12:51 here on the Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand in the studio, along with Randy Schaefer, who's a digital editor for the Chicago Tribune, comes by on most Monday afternoons to talk about what's what in social media. Welcome back, Randy.
Well, hey,
and you taught me something of this article. I have not used Venmo yet. I think my wife and son were just on Venmo earlier this week or last week, so you know, they're kind of hip to it. I haven't really followed it yet. But the story is that I didn't realize it was public. Like, what you spend, anyone can go see what you're spending on Venmo?
Yeah, well, you can, like most social media sites, you can change the default settings, but Venmo typically defaults to public, so people can see your transactions. They can see what you're spending your money
on. And so Venmo's a way for me, if we get pizza and you pay for it and I can pay half of it through Venmo, I Venmo you.
Right, you don't have to write me a check. You can just open the app on your phone and say, $10 for pizza, 3 pizza emojis, send it to Randy.
And it's connected to my checking account, presumably.
Yep, exactly.
And so then if I wanted to see what you're spending your money on, I could find you on Venmo and see a list of your transactions?
You could, yes. Lots of pizza emojis.
That's really unusual. I had no idea that was the case.
Yeah, and so this story that I sent you was this this programmer that had sent he made this little bot that was kind of perusing Venmo for these what looked to be drug-related transactions, and this Twitter bot was sharing them. And of course, it was funny because one of the examples was Your Love Is My Drug, which is a song,
right.
But this bot thought it was a drug transaction.
And so he's kind of calling them out, and you can go follow this guy and see.
Yeah, the Twitter account was called Venmo Drugs. He shut it down and just kind of did it as an experiment to say, like, hey, you guys, you don't realize how much your stuff's public.
And so, I guess I didn't realize that. I just was talking to someone else who was on Venmo who had language flagged and got into a little kerfuffle about it. So just keep in mind, just put pizza. Just
exactly, the pizza emoji. You can never go wrong.
Okay, we've talked about this before, but Instagram is really big for people who want to travel or other social media sites. And lo and behold, there's this article at Forbes.com about how you can't always believe what you see on social media sites about travel.
What? On the internet?
That
shocking.
Can't be true,
yeah. I'm shocked. Yeah, this story I sent you from Forbes shows that Alliance Global Alliance conducted a study, and 36% of millennial travelers have admitted to posting misleading vacation photos.
Well, but, you know, I'm reading this and I'm thinking, yeah, but before there was social media, I might take 100 pictures on a trip and only save 75 of them. That's kind of the same thing.
Right, and you're only maybe going to put, what, 3 of them on the wall of your house, and they're going to be the best ones.
I'm not going to come home and tell stories to my family about what a terrible trip I had. I'm going to put the best face
on it. Right, and you're not going to talk about the long bus rides or like the layovers. You're going to talk about the beaches, and you're going to talk about the nice parts.
And so what's the issue here?
The issue, I think, is that a lot of people go into traveling with unrealistic expectations, but, you know, 51% of people said that they're still going to choose these places, even though they know this.
You know, I led a group to Norway and Denmark earlier this summer, WGN listeners, and then right after that, Dave Ennett led a group on the exact same itinerary, and I created a Facebook page for both groups to sort of share questions and things like that. I was actually concerned because I felt like my first trip was going so well, mm-hmm. and the weather was so nice, and the pictures they were posting might create an unrealistic expectation for the second group, and that they would actually be disappointed when they took off.
Well, the second group should have gone with you then.
Well, as it turned out, they had better weather and everything was just fine. So, but I do see where that expectation thing is something you need to manage.
Absolutely, yeah.
Maggie Haberman announced famously over the weekend, New York Times reporter.
Yes.
Often on CNN, that she is leaving Twitter.
Yes, and this piece by Maggie Haberman for the New York Times.
They probably tweeted out the article.
Yeah, I did find it on Twitter. So she's the White House correspondent, obviously covers Trump. We all know how Trump feels about Twitter. And so she announced that she's taking a break. She's just not a fan of what the platform has become. And for her, it's just not worth it to be on there right now.
What are your thoughts on that?
You know, working in the media, I can kind of see it. I read the Chicago Tribune mentions all day, every day, and it does kind of get wearing. And I can only imagine, you know, if it was directed personally at me, like some of the stuff that Maggie Haberman sees.
Right. It's kind of your job to follow all of that and stay on top of it.
Right. And sometimes people forget that there's an actual person behind these accounts. There's somebody that's actually reading all of this hatred and vitriol. And sometimes it's kind of easy to forget that.
I use Twitter. I'm a receiver more than a
tweeter?
Sender, I think so. So if there's and Haberman talked about this too, it still is a great sort of aggregator of news. And if something's going on in the world, a way to find out, you know, reputable spots. But the hatred all involved is really a little too much to overcome.
Absolutely. And I can see where she's coming from 100%.
We also talk about influencers and how they make their money. And you sent me a story from, I'm not sure where it's from, I don't have it in front of me, but just this new sort of digest of people anonymously talking about how they're getting, if not getting rich, at least getting some cash out of being an influencer.
And this is the Refinery 29. So they do a money diary, and they started a new one for Instagram influencers where they can detail how much they get for a post and what they do with that money. And this woman, she's an anonymous yogi. She got $7,200 to post a photo of matcha on her Instagram.
And she just took a picture of herself with her own phone, and they wanted her hands in it.
Yep.
And she made $7,200.
Yep.
And then she talked about how she makes a few grand a week, right?
Yeah, absolutely. She said she usually charges $1,000 to $2,000 for a post like that.
And this explains why now universities are starting programs to become
Instagram influencers.
Why
There's money
not?
In it. It's lucrative.
And Randy Schaefer, digital editor of the Chicago Tribune, thank you for coming by.
Of course.